Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians opened up their series in Minnesota the best way possible, spoiling Minnesota's home opener with a 4-2 win. The bullpen looked great. Tanner Bibee looked great. Offensively, they got the hits they needed and scored some runs. What'd you see in Cleveland's series opening win, and what's the feeling in that clubhouse now at 6-2?
Yeah, Joe. Tanner Bibee, very good compared to his first start of the season against Oakland. Pitches out of some early trouble. First inning, had a man on third with one out, gets the next two guys. Second inning, he loads the bases with two outs. And then gets a strikeout to end that inning. And, that's the way it went for him for 5 1/3 innings. But he did give them 5 1/3, and they really needed it, Joe. The bullpen has been really worked hard. And then the pen comes in, like you said, and kind of slammed the door. They made things interesting, but they slammed the door.
Yeah, I think with guys like Scott Barlow and, some young guys in new roles in that bullpen, right now, it might be interesting over the next couple of months here when we get in situations like that and we see the Guardians, trying to protect the lead and get the ball to Class A. But, yesterday, they give up a couple of runs, but they still got big strikeouts in big spots. Hunter Gaddis comes in and strikes out Byron Buxton. I believe, was it Barlow struck out Carlos Santana as well? There were, just big moments within those couple three innings there that really, when they sort of finished those innings off, they looked pretty solid.
Oh, yeah, and Barlow was really impressive to me, Joe. He gives up the leadoff double in the eighth to Correa, and you're thinking, here come the Twins. And then he strikes out Santana on a 3-2 pitch. He gets a pinch hitter, Margot, strikes him out. Then he goes 3-2 on Castro, our old buddy Willie Castro from the farm system, and strikes him out. So, I think he's going to be an adventure, Joe. He's a fun guy. But I think it's going to be fun watching this guy pitch. He kind of weaves in and out of trouble. And then Class A just three straight. Class A, Joe, is 18 for 18 in save situations against the Twins.
Yeah, so the Twins definitely don't want to see you get the ball to Class A with a lead at any point in facing the Guardians if you're a Twins fan. Offensively, Stephen Kwan just continues to churn out hits. Right now, he is leading the American League. He's leading the American League with 15 hits, and he's second in baseball behind Mookie Betts for total number of hits with 15. I think Betts has 16. 385 average, 400 on base, slugging 513 for a 913 OPS. This is exactly what you need out of your leadoff hitter, especially in this offense. And Stephen Kwan is really coming through.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He started the game-winning rally with a single in the fourth inning. This was his second straight three-hit game, his third three-hit game of the season. He's got 30 for his career, Joe. I mean, when did that happen? Didn't this guy just make his debut like 2 days ago? I mean, the guy just came up from the minors, right? But he's already got 30 three-hit games. And, if you look at his bat, Joe, it's really interesting. He has they call it a hockey puck handle bat. Mm-hmm. So that the end of the bat is a knob. And it kind of sometimes it acts as a counterweight. It helps him develop bat speed. And he's been using that since last year. And I don't know if that's part of this, but, he looks great right now at the plate.
Yeah, there's a hitting tool for kids that I've seen and that I've used in coaching over in the past, where the bat looks kind of like it has like a bubble over your hand and then a knob, very similar to what Kwan has on his bat. And it really just sort of, it feels different when you swing it through the zone because the weight underneath your hands there. Hey, whatever works for him, because it seems to really keep him locked in, and he's getting on base, he's making things happen. The top of that lineup is causing so much chaos on the bases. We saw what it did to Seattle's defense for a couple of games out there. Pretty much the same thing. You put pressure on teams defensively, and that's what Kwan and Jimenez and Ramirez have been doing in these first eight games.
No doubt about that. Like you said, you really saw it in against Seattle in the third game. I mean, Seattle kind of crumbled. I mean, when the top of that lineup really kind of got on base or pressed them, and the last two games, Joe, this is what the top of the lineup has done. We're talking about Kwan, Jimenez, and Ramirez. They're hitting a combined 444, 12 hits and 27 at bats, 9 runs and 4 RBIs. So when one of those guys gets on base, it is I mean, they're rolling. They kind of feed off each other. And Joe, I really like it's an interesting bit to have watched Jimenez in that second hole, because he is really doing a nice job.
Yeah, and not only that, but he continues to get hit by pitch at an alarming rate. What is he? He's four hit by pitches in the first eight games. It's he finds a way to get on base, and he's also hitting the ball the way that 2022 Andrés Giménez was hitting the ball, with a little bit of power and actually with a little bit less swing and miss.
I know Tito was reluctant, excuse me, to hit him in the number two spot at times because he didn't like the two lefties hitting consecutively. But Vogt has shown no fear in doing that, and he's kind of this that yesterday was his eighth start in the number two spot, and he looks like he belongs there.
Yeah, that's it seems like a natural fit, and I know that we've had fans, we've had subtext subscribers write in, pushing the issue of why isn't Jimenez batting second all the last two since 2022. Why doesn't he bat second? Why don't you put him in that spot? It was occupied by Ahmed Rosario for so long, but this does seem to work out. This is another one of these buttons that Vogt has pushed that seems to be the right call, and we'll see over the long haul how that plays out. But right now, the top of the Guardians lineup is rolling. Hey, I mentioned subtext. I want to remind our listeners, if you want to subscribe, get updates from Hoynsie and from me throughout the season, sent directly to your phone. You don't have to mess with social media or tweets or anything like that. It's $3.99 a month. You log on to cleveland.com/subtext or go to 216-208-4346 for the latest Guardians news sent directly to your phone. One of the Guardians updates sent directly to your phone just recently. I let people know there was an official scoring change from that game Wednesday in Seattle. That does affect Andrés Giménez. It takes a hit away from him, actually. And that kind of hurts, and takes two earned runs off the board for George Kirby on that play in the fourth inning when the middle infielders for Seattle, George Kirby and Jorge Polanco, collided on a ground ball hit by Giménez. It was originally ruled a base hit. The official scorer changed it to an error on, I believe, on the second baseman. That's going to, certainly affect George Kirby's ERA. It's going to affect Andrés Giménez's batting average. But in the long run, I don't think it's going to matter much to Giménez. In the end, the Guardians won the game. What did you think of that play? It was a bit of a weird play. And how do you penalize Giménez? Giménez hit the ball, and put it where it couldn't be cleanly fielded or have a play made on it. How do you penalize and take a hit away from him, Giménez, in that situation?
Well, that's Seattle taking care of their one of their number one starters. How many times have we seen this, Joe? I mean, Cleveland does it. Every team does it. If your ace gets hammered and there's a chance that they can take a couple earned runs off his line, they're going to work really hard at doing that. I mean, Crawford almost killed Polanco on that play. I mean, he could have blown his knee out. He submarined the guy. I don't know what he was doing on that side of the field. And to give Polanco the air, that's crazy. I mean, God, Crawford ran him over. It was like an open field tackle. I mean,
Well,
that's amazing to me. I mean, I could, okay, you change it to an air. All right, I get that. But Polanco gets the air? And Joe, did you see that play? How far on the other side of the infield was Crawford? I
well, I
mean, I
mean,
know he's playing up the middle.
we're used to seeing that over the last a decade. We're used to seeing shortstops come over and be on that side of the bag to make plays when there's a left-handed hitter in the box. Just now, with the restrictions on where you're allowed to start on the infield, he had to come from all the way on the other side of second base to even be in range there. So that tells you something. But yeah, I feel bad for Jimenez because you got the hit on the board and now it's taken away. The explanation is kind of thin, but if you're Jimenez, what's going on there. You know that it's they want to take two earned runs off the board for Kirby. So, what are you going to do? There's a whole appeals process. They had to go through Elias to do it. So, it's official now.
Joe, that reminded me. Do you remember that play? This is a while ago. It was at Tropicana Field where Johnny Peralta fell on Asdrubal Cabrera and broke Cabrera's arm or something. Like he knocked Cabrera out. I mean, out of the. He put him on the IL. But and it was kind of a similar play than that. And Peralta was like the biggest shortstop in captivity, and he just fell on Asdrubal, and that was it.
Yeah, that was the thing is Johnny Peralta was no small guy. I mean, if he's going to land on you at full speed, it's not going to feel great. So I can imagine missing a few games in that situation if you're Johnny Peralta or if you're Asdrubal Cabrera. Just to get back, and I don't want to take anything away from the effort of Tanner Bibee in that win yesterday for the Guardians. Nine strikeouts, and he looks like he's sort of corrected whatever was troubling him in Oakland. Still looks like he's fighting mechanics a little bit, but it's early in the season. What'd you see out of Tanner Bibee that you liked and gives you hope for success moving forward?
Yeah, he really liked the idea of the way he established his fastball yesterday. He was down on himself against Oakland, said he didn't throw enough strikes yesterday, 64 strikes and 93 pitches. And I just like how competitive this guy is, Joe. I mean, you can see kind of the smoke coming out of his ears. Whenever he gets in a jam, he really picks his game up. I was talking to Bo Naylor after the game who caught him. He just said his stuff was electric. He goes, really, controlled the strike zone with his fastball. And he said he could put his breaking pitches wherever he wanted. So he was really impressed with Bibee.
Yeah, and they're going to need more of that because this Guardians bullpen has thrown the second most innings out of any bullpen in baseball coming into Thursday or coming into the off day on Friday actually, right behind Oakland. So and that's with Logan Allen and Shane Bieber both getting a little deeper into games in their starts. So it's just they're going to need a little more length like Bibee was able to give you. His early on his pitch count started to sort of climb and you were getting nervous about that, but he sort of reeled it in and got them into the sixth inning. So good to see a lot of positives out of Tanner Bibee's outing yesterday. Hey, a story that broke yesterday actually while we were recording our podcast. And it came across, and we mentioned it briefly about the Oakland A's moving their season in 2025. They're going to play in Sacramento at a minor league ballpark there. I put it out to our subtext subscribers. Hey, what are your thoughts? What are your memories of Cleveland has now played its final game in Oakland. It's never going back. to the Coliseum. I just wanted I know you were fond of going out there, fond of making that trip and covering games in Oakland. What were some of your memories, your fondest memories of the Coliseum and seeing the Guardians play out there? And I put that to our subtext subscribers, and we'll go through a few of their responses. But I want to start with you, Hoynesy. What do you remember most about watching games at the Coliseum in Oakland?
But Joe, they used to have a concession stand there that had the best chocolate chip cookies like in the world. I used to always go down there between innings and get some. But game wise, you're probably talking about game wise, right? Yeah, I remember they used to the Indians and the A's used to hate each other when I first started covering back in the 80s and mid 80s. And whenever they went out to Oakland, it seemed like they always fought. And that's where Pat Corrales charged Dave Stewart. After they threw it, I think they threw it Julio or Tony Bernazard, one or the other. Stewart threw at him.
He thought that Stewart should have been warned or ejected for throwing at Julio.
And then so Corrales goes charging out to the mound and tries to karate kick Stewart, and Stewart like laid him out with a right hand. It was a great right hand. It's like Muhammad Ali could have thrown it. And Corrales went down on all fours, and then like it was the end of the world. Both benches emptied. It was a great brawl. Carmen Castillo, who like box him, who was their big DH? Oh God. I can't remember the guy's name, but Carmen
Henderson, Dave
Castillo
Henderson.
like did a tap dance on this guy's face.
I mean, that was it. I've seen the video a number of times. What stands out in my memory is Corrales after the game, as he's basically looks like he's just been in a prize fight, and they were interviewing him, and he said, Stewart said, come on out, and so I came out. He's like, I got to stand up for my guys. So that he was like, he was very matter of fact about it. He's just like, he said, come out, so I came out.
He had a big lump on the side of his face.
Oh, man.
It was the best. That's the only time I've ever seen a manager charge a mound.
Wow, that's great. Just asking our subtext subscribers, I've got Doug from Ocala, Florida. He says, I remember Claudel Washington ending Gaylord Perry's 15-game winning streak with a late inning pinch hit in 1974. We had stayed up late to watch the game, and we were so disappointed. So I mean, this goes back to when the A's were dominant in the 70s, right? In like 74. And staying up late to sort of watch those broadcasts was always a thing for us back here in Cleveland.
Yeah, that was a game I think they weren't going to televise originally, Joe, cl in Cleveland, and then they kind of threw it together at the end, the TV thing. And I think John Adams even went out there for that game. He was pounding the drum for out there. So yeah, that was a special game. There was a playoff game out there, Joe. It was Boston and Oakland, and we were sitting up in the auxiliary deck above the press box. It was like it was a hot day. It was blazing sun, and Roger Clemens is starting for Oakland. I mean Boston, and it was the first time I've ever seen a pitcher wear an eye black. It was like he had war paint on, and he got kicked out in the first, I think, the first or second inning because he was screaming at the umpire. He gets kicked out of a playoff
I do remember that. Yeah. He got ejected from a playoff game
game.
For arguing balls and
Tony
strikes.
Pena's trying to calm him down or calm the umpire down, and the umpire threw him out from behind home plate because he thought
He was barking
he
at him.
thought, yeah, Clemens was swearing at him.
From our subtext subscriber, Mark in Norwalk, he writes in, I can remember at age 11 on a late Saturday afternoon watching on WUAB as Chris James drove in 9 and the Indians scored 20 runs against one of those juggernaut A's teams. He said, I think Cleveland lost 105 games that year, but it remains a stunning memory to look back on all these years later. Were you at that game? Did you cover that
Yeah,
Chris
I
James
was
9
covering
RBI
that
game?
game. Yeah, Chris James looked like He had that 1,000-yard stare after the game. He could not believe what he'd just done. I mean, he just looks like he was like unconscious almost. He could not believe it. I think what was it, 8 or 9 RBIs? It was a club record. I
Yeah,
think
9
somebody,
RBIs.
yeah, I think a couple people have tied it since. Lonnie Chisenhall may have tied that.
Yeah, and what I remember was that, Chris James was he had just come over or just been acquired by, wasn't that the Sandy Alomar trade
Yeah,
that he
that
came
was the
over?
Joe Carter
So
trade.
he wasn't he wasn't real familiar to a lot of Guardians fans at the time, but I think I was about 14 watching that game and going, who the hell's Chris James? And then all
Yeah,
of a sudden, nine RBIs.
his brother was the running back at SMU. I can't remember. He was the more famous of the two brothers, but the college running back.
Craig James. Craig James. It was
Yeah.
Craig James and Eric Dickerson, the Pony Express at
The
SMU.
Pony
Yeah.
Express, yeah.
There you go. Well, why is he pulling out Pony Express references? This is great. We'll do one more memory here from our subtext subscribers who wrote in just talking about these the great rivalry and memories of Oakland's Coliseum and the A's and the Indians Guardians. This Darren in Fleetwood, Pennsylvania writes in. He says, I remember listening to an Indians opener versus the A's in 1983. Cleveland won 4-0. Andre Thornton hit a home run. Sutcliffe started, and a lot of memories there. So, just going all the way back, just the guys that played in that sort of rivalry, like you said, in the 80s. A lot of fun to sort of reminisce about. And you sparked something in my memory there, Hoynesy, about John Adams used to make that trip more than just once. I think he was out there kind of often when they would travel to Oakland and he'd be banging his drum in the outfield.
And that was that's interesting that you brought up Sutcliffe's name. There was a game he was pitching out there. It might have been that game where somebody charged the mound and charged Sutcliffe. And I talked to the guy, I can't remember who it was, but I talked to the guy after the game. He goes, "The closer I got to the mound, the bigger Sutcliffe got." So he was kind of having second thoughts about that.
Yeah, not a small individual is Rick Sutcliffe. All right, Hoynesy, off day today, kind of unusual for a Friday. What are you going to do in Minnesota? What are you going to do in Minneapolis? Please tell me you're going to go to the steakhouse that's right around the corner from the ballpark, because that's a favorite when you're out there.
Yeah, Murray's Steakhouse.
Murray's.
I might stop there, Joe. But
There
right
you
now,
go.
I'm just gonna sleep for a while.
Been 8 straight days for the Guardians. Been 8 straight days for Hoynesy on the road. Nobody's going to blame you if you don't leave your hotel room tonight. We'll check back in with you. Actually, the next time we talk to you, the next time we see you, will be on Monday, ahead of the home opener, ahead of the solar eclipse, ahead of all the craziness that's coming to downtown Cleveland on Monday morning. We'll look forward to that, and we'll look forward to talking to you then.
Good deal, Joe.